Hello there. It's a new episode of Lauren Has Friends. Welcome. I'm Lauren Kozlowski, and it has been a while. I'm sorry about that. I can't make any promises that the next one will come any sooner, but let's be glad for what we have right now, which is a new episode. So thank you for listening. It's been a while, and a lot of things have happened. I'm currently on a job search, so if you think, man, I would really like Lauren to come work at my job, by all means, give me a call. I will send you a resume. It will be on Microsoft Word. I hope that's okay. And we'll talk. It'll be nice. But a lot's been going on besides searching for a job. I started taking a improv class, and I've learned a lot about myself, and I've learned a lot about finding humor in truth. And it's been a lot of fun. And I think everyone should take a class. There you go. Even people who might not be funny, I think it would be good for them. Just kind of get out there, feel out your strengths, feel out what you can do in front of a group of people. whatever that means, I don't know. But the most important thing that, of course, has happened since the last podcast is of course, that I saw the movie Paycheck. It's a film by John Woo. Stars Ben Affleck. It is not very good. It's sort of like a low-rent, half-assed Minority Report. It's a version of the future where everything's kind of not really thought out that well. Sort of like, oh, what's the future like? It's shiny. That's what it's like, basically. So you have Ben Affleck. He's not a good actor. I mean, he might be better now. I enjoyed him in The Town, but in Paycheck, he's very bad. And there's a feeling watching the movie that maybe it may have made a little more sense when they wrote it down. And then a lot of movie star egos came in and somebody said, well, you know, Ben really wants to show how good he is with a bow, with the martial arts weapon, the bow. And John Woo probably said, well, this character is a nerd. He just works on computers. Why would he be using a bow stick? And they said, this is just what Ben wants to do. He wants to show that he has been working out. Plus, later on in the movie, you can have a scene where he picks up a bow and hits a bunch of people with it. And it'll make sense. And to which I think someone should have said, well, it doesn't really make sense to begin with. Fine, we'll do it. So you have a scene in the movie where Ben Affleck trains with a bow stick. And his trainer is Paul Giamatti, who is also the character that wipes his memory, but they're friendly about it. He's like, hey, you wipe my memory, let's go to the gym. You shouldn't watch it, but it is on Netflix Instant, which is how I saw it. So use your discretion, but probably not watch it. Considering that Stone is on Netflix Instant, which I still haven't watched either, but it has Edward Norton in cornrows, which I think is something that we all need to see once in our lives. So without further ado, though, let's dive into these interviews, or conversations, really. Not interviews, the conversations. So the first conversation is with my lovely wife, Rachel. We talked about her favorite movie, Gone with the Wind, and her feelings about it, my feelings about it. And it was a lot of fun to watch, and it was a lot of fun to talk about.
All right, Rachel. So here we are. Thanks for joining me, first and foremost.
You're welcome.
I know you've been wanting to be on the podcast for a long time.
Yes.
And you've been questioning why you haven't been on the podcast for a long time. And it's because we were waiting. Good things come to those who wait.
Yes, they do.
All right. So today, we're talking about is it your favorite movie? Is it one of your favorite movies?
It's
do you hate this movie?
It's one of my favorite. I have lots of favorite movies.
Okay. One of your favorite movies, Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
How long have you been trying to get me to watch Gone with the Wind?
How long have we been dating? 7 years?
7 years.
So probably the last five.
The
maybe.
Last 5 years.
Really amped it up in the last couple of years.
Last couple of years. And now that we've watched it, what movie am I going to make you watch?
Money Talks.
Money Talks. Fair is fair. Anyway. So first of all... Gone with the Wind is very good.
Yes, it is. This is what I've been telling you.
Yes.
It's very good.
It's a very good movie. And How old were you when you first saw it?
I was 8.
And how many times do you think you've watched it?
Oh, I have no idea. I honestly probably like a dozen, because it's a 4-hour movie, so it couldn't have been that many times that I watched it. But it felt
a
like
a dozen
it was
a times is a lot of times.
Oh, well,
that's a lot. Like, I haven't seen Face Off a dozen times, and I love Face Off.
Well, keep in mind, I'm 30, and I saw it when I was 8, so
it's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, anyway,
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, just to put it in perspective, though, we've seen The Room 10 times.
Yeah.
In 3 years? That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, we're getting off track already.
Anyway.
So Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
It's one of your favorites.
Yes.
I very much enjoyed it. I found the first hour and a half a bit rough to get through.
Well, it really has to set up the whole, like, the way that the South was and really what they lost.
For people who've never seen Gone with the Wind, can you break it down? Break down the 4 hours into a nutshell? I mean, you have to spoil the whole movie.
It's all about Scarlett O'Hara, who's the main character.
What's she like?
She's great. She is a Southern belle, one of three sisters, half Irish, half Southern. So
12 times. All right, got it.
And so she grows up on a plantation, and she is in love with Ashley, who is going to marry his cousin, and does marry his cousin, and
nobody seems to be really weirded out by that.
No,
I think Rhett Butler at one point makes a crack about it, but that's pretty much it.
Well, when I was a kid,
and it could have been a crack, or it could have just been how he talks, because he seems to be joking about everything for the first 2.5 hours of the movie.
Well, he pretty much, like, you know, calls everybody on their shit, like, in the beginning of the movie. Like, he's the outsider. He's the gentleman from Charleston. So they're all in...
He's a scalawag.
Yeah, he's scalawag, yeah. No, like, I don't think I understood when I was 8 what, like,
incest was.
You know, and marrying your cousins.
That's weird stuff.
So when we were watching it, yeah, I noticed this line when Ashley's trying to explain to Scarlett, like, that he loves Melanie, that she gets him in a way that no one else gets. And he says, she like, something about, like, having the same blood. And it's like, yeah, you do. So,
Now, I thought the actor who played Ashley looked a little like Michael Fassbender. You didn't see that?
No,
you don't see that?
I really have never understood why Scarlett was so infatuated with Ashley. He never appealed to me. Never. Not when I was 8, not when I'm 30. I really don't get it.
Okay. Because she's really into this guy. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett O'Hara is our main character. I hated her for the first hour and a half.
I know. You thought she... Well, I mean, she kind of is a bad person, but you watch her kind of grow up, and she does have to do some awful things to sort of, you know, maintain her family name, and, you know, she rebuilds their plantation from, like, nothing. I mean, they had nothing. You know, the Yankees had taken everything. She returned to the plantation. Her mom is dead. Her dad has dementia, and, you know, she really has to step up and sort of lead the O'Hara family back to glory.
To glory.
Well, and Tara, you know.
And Tara. I love how, you know, about 2.5 hours in, if you're watching the movie, 2.5 hours in, you will be on a first-name basis with the plantation, Tara. And
It has its own theme.
It has its own theme song. It is its own character in the film.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that first hour and a half. So this movie takes place during and after the Civil War, and yet somehow is not as racist as I thought it would be. Yeah, it's still kind of racist.
Yeah, I was going to say, it felt a little racist when I was watching
it. Well, I mean, it felt racist, but I think I was expecting it to be really racist.
Yeah.
But I guess it couldn't be really racist, or people would still, you know...
It wouldn't be.
It wouldn't be. It'd be like Birth of a Nation or something. Like, right. Oh, yeah, well, that's an old film. Yeah, but you don't want to watch that anymore. It'll make you uncomfortable. This one, for the most I mean, like, okay, you have a character like, well, most of the African-American characters in the movie talk in this, I don't know. It's, I don't know how I would describe it. It's sort of like it's sort of a dumbed down, what would you even call it? Sort of a twang, like, yeah, miss. You know, everyone's, I mean, most of them are supposed to be slave characters, but I mean, they seem to talk dumber than I think a person would actually talk.
Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, a character like Mammy is smarter than pretty much anyone else in the movie.
Oh, well, she's the best. And so she calls Scarlett on her shit. She knows when Scarlett, like, for some reason, like, Scarlett's parents don't really see Scarlett for how she is, but the only two people that really know Scarlett is Rhett Butler and Mamie. And then everyone else, you know, she's with Melanie, Ashley's wife, for most of the movie. They live together while all the men are away at war. And Melanie still doesn't get that Scarlett is in love with her husband. And so Mamie is one of the few people that knows what Scarlett is up to.
And I don't know if it was Stockholm Syndrome or not, but I mean, at the beginning of the movie, all I could think was, Melanie is so dumb. She's so, how is she not picking this up? How is she not figuring out that Scarlett is in love with her husband? And by the end of the movie, when all the characters are saying, you know, she only saw the good in people and everything, you're like, yeah, she kind of did. But I mean, now, removed from having watched the movie a couple days ago, Melanie is kind of dense. I mean, I don't know how she never picked up on that.
You know, I think she knew, but she saw Scarlett's potential, because as much as you want to say that Scarlett is a terrible person, you know, for lusting after this guy and
the first hour and a half, Scarlett's awful.
Right. But I mean, but she could easily have just gone off and married somebody and abandoned her whole family.
Mm-hmm.
She could have abandoned Melanie at any point. I mean, you know, she could have died during birth easily, and Scarlett could have scooped up Ashley. Then of course the movie wouldn't have the movie, but you know, Scarlett would have her Ashley.
Right.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Rhett Butler.
Yes.
So Clark Gable.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first movie I've ever seen with Clark Gable in it. And
it's the only film I've ever seen with Clark Gable, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I'm not interested in his other works.
No.
No.
No. Mm-mm. He's very good in this.
Mm-hmm.
He's very funny. And we were talking about how just about everybody who was nominated for an Oscar for this movie won, except for him. And I think it's because the acting in this movie is very much, for the most part, that old-timey, I don't want to say broad, but it's pre-method, it's pre...
Like more theatrical?
More theatrical. It's pre-Brando, you know, Streetcar Named Desire, you know, On the Waterfront.
Yeah.
You know, Brando kind of did it. But I feel like Clark Gable, his character is talking more like
a real person.
A real person, yeah. Would. And I think that's why he didn't win, because he wasn't doing what was expected and what people, I mean, that's why the character's so good though, because he's in the middle of, you know, a lot of this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
He's sitting there going, you guys are all ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he is, I think the first 3 hours of this movie, he's just smirking all the time. He's a little smirk everywhere. It's only during like the last hour 15, when the movie gets more serious, even though it's always been kind of serious, when his character really kind of comes to the forefront.
Well, he becomes more involved because, right, spoiler alert, him and Scarlett get married.
Good for them.
Yes. And, you know, he, he had this playful banter with her for the first half of the movie, where he's this older man and he's kind of teasing her and calling her out. And, you know, he knows her in a way that other people don't know her. And, you know, and he knows that she enjoys that sort of playfulness. And so he thinks that, you know, if he can sort of lavish her with all of his money and everything, and he treats her like a queen, that will be enough. But it's not, because she's in love with Ashley. And, and then I think he realizes that he isn't enough. Nothing's enough for her, and it's sort of sad.
This is very true. I don't have anything to add to that.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also look at it as, you know, the first 2.5 hours is him sort of being cutesy, flirty, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like in that early dating stages.
Yeah.
And then, like, once you marry somebody, you're like, we got bills. No more jokes.
Is that how it is for us?
Well, we got bills.
Yeah.
That's for sure. We take time to joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do.
So, but I want to say I'm glad that you had me watch Gone with the Wind.
Good. I was really worried that you weren't going to like it, and I didn't know how to deal with that.
Well, you did give me an out at the intermission saying we could finish it another day, but I knew I had to finish it, like, that night.
Well, it kind of locks you in. Like, you know, it's a really long movie, and you don't think, like, oh, I'm going to get sucked into this epic movie. But the last time I watched it, it was like 2 hours before I had to leave for work, and I just turned on AMC and it was on, and I just sat down, not even on my couch, on like the coffee table, and I just like got sucked in, and then I was like, oh, I have to go. But it's just so like, it just, these characters, they just draw you in. I mean,
definitely the second half. The second half, where is the rebuilding, and Scarlett has to make a dress out of curtains, and which I can't believe is an exciting plot point, but it is an important plot point. And also it's the type of movie that feels like an anomaly,
mm-hmm.
because it's hugely grand. You get, you know, these giant, the famous shot where the camera pulls back to show like a giant massive street of wounded Civil War soldiers. And they're all moving, so they're all pretty much real, though some of them were mannequins, I think I read. And it has this huge scope, yet does not lack for characters and developed characters. And it doesn't get lost in the details. Like, it manages to be 4.5 hours long, to encompass all this time, but it doesn't feel weighted down and murky and the way that, you know, you can, they make these movies that are 3 hours. Well, I don't know what movie I'm trying to cite here, but there are long movies that feel long. And
Avatar.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would say that this movie is a good example where every single part is important and you need every single part to build up, to build up, to build up. Well, yeah, the middle of Avatar is just, look at what we could do with these,
well,
with tech.
My problem with Avatar was that, like, the whole beginning of the movie was just, like, created so, like, you could give a shit about these characters, so that way you would feel something when they tried to, like, destroy them. Like, it wasn't really, like... Do you know, I'm not really interested in these people, but they're, like, playing... You know, trying to make them sympathetic so that way when they ultimately have to be taken down, like, I don't know. And I think that's where Gone with the Wind is different, because, like, you meet these people and Scarlett isn't likable, you know?
Mm-mm.
And really the South, it's built on slavery.
Right.
So they introduced
They've given me two reasons to dislike this person. She lives on a plantation run by, that uses slaves. And she goes to a, don't they go at the beginning of the movie?
The barbecue.
The barbecue, yeah. Which is supposed to raise money for the Confederacy.
Right.
Yeah, so you have that. And then everyone leaves the barbecue to join the Confederacy, like in the middle of the barbecue.
Right.
Like, we're going. It's happening right now. Hold my ribs.
So really, I mean, you shouldn't like these people, because these are people that use slaves and, you know, but, you know, there's still this sort of like...
Humanity
to them, and... It's just, and it's, I don't know, it's kind of sad. You know, there was like this, it was this grand time of like, of sort of like royalty in this country in a way. Do you know what I mean? And of course, I mean, that's not necessarily a good thing, but it's this sort of fantasy of like,
yes.
You know.
Well, another thing to talk about, how the, every single, I guess like character who's a slave in the movie, and is later freed, still works for them, like Mammy and everyone. Like, even though like post intermission, the war's over.
The those were all the house slaves. All because remember when they come back, like when Scarlet comes back to Terra and everything is like, you know, they need to start doing the cotton again and all that stuff. And the one, I can't remember his name, but he's like, we're house workers. We don't know anything about working outside of the house. Mm. So I think they stayed because where else were they going to go to another house? You know, a lot of the slaves left so they could, I mean, they could do manual labor and get paid, but a lot of the house
you
workers.
You've clearly seen this movie more times than I have.
Yeah, yeah. So,
But at the same time, though, every single one they encounter, there's a scene where Scarlet encounters a bunch of people that used to work on her farm, like slaves in the street.
Yeah.
And they're all super excited to see her. Like, they wave her down. Like, hey!
Well, the other thing, too, is that the movie does set up that her parents were very kind people. Like, you know, they had slaves, but her mom...
They were good slave owners.
Yeah, her mom was very generous. I think her mom was a physician or something, because she goes to visit sick people, and that's how she ends up dying, and she catches, like, typhoid fever from, like, the local white trash that they all talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they were supposed to be very nice people. So I think the idea is that, you know, the O'Haras were good people, and that, you know, they so they don't think poorly of them. I mean, also the other thing too is Mamie pointed out when she delivered Scarlet's baby, she's been in their family for three generations. Like, she's a part of their family. So it's like, I mean, why would she leave? She's essentially like her grandmother. So I mean, why would she leave Scarlet? Scarlet needs all that, you know. She needs help.
You can't leave her by herself. No. That's very true. So the sets in this movie, gorgeous. The main mansion they're in at the end of the movie.
Oh yeah,
insane.
The butler.
I believe. What did you say? You said this mansion blows Terra out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Tara, it's so great. You don't have a giant velvet staircase.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into really spoilerish territory. This movie does not screw around when it comes to violence. We've got a soldier gets shot in the face.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think they were going to do. And then they, like, clean up the blood with, like, a dress or something.
With her nightgown.
Mm-hmm. And it's all very matter-of-fact. Like, this is what happens. And then later on, let's see. Scarlet loses a baby falling down a staircase.
Yep.
Pretty much right after Rhett Butler says, maybe I'll have an accident.
And then she falls down the staircase.
And then in the biggest shocker...
Well, there's also marital rape.
Oh, there is marital rape. Yes. I forgot about that. That scene's crazy.
Yeah, that was a dark scene.
That scene is dark. They're yelling at each other, and then Rhett Butler says, all right, I'm taking you upstairs and raping you. And then he takes her upstairs, and this, I mean, watching him take her upstairs is very much a classic shot. And then it fades to black, and then the next thing, she's waking up in bed, and she's doing the... What a nice sleep stretch. Like, yeah, it was a great night of getting raped. Yeah. I feel great this morning. Which that just felt like, you know, they could have been a little thing in the corner. Said 1939. That's how we do. And then, of course, the death of their child is the craziest scene in the movie.
It's really sad.
It is. But at the same time, I couldn't believe they killed that kid. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, it didn't occur to me that would be, like, a surprise for you because that's something that I've known. Because I feel like even the first time I saw it, like, I don't think I was surprised that it happened. Like, I don't, like, it wasn't, it, I don't know. Like, it, like I just.
I didn't know about that. I've known, I knew about the last, you know, one of the last lines of the movie, you know, Franklin, my dear, I don't give a damn. That I know about.
Yeah.
I like that line is, you can know that line, but the build up to it is still really good.
How was that for you? Because I know when I saw, Casablanca for the first time, I just felt like the whole movie was a cliche just because, you know, I'd seen so many parodies of it in like Animaniacs and, you know, just in all sorts of, you know, different things. It sort of ruined it.
It didn't ruin it. I knew it was coming, but the feeling I had was one of that's the best way to cap this whole scene. I mean, if he delivers that, I mean, when he delivers that line, it's gonna kill, and it does. It totally kills. It's the perfect capper to the scene. And speaking just of you know, how you say, like, things have been, you know, parodied and things are cliched, this movie has a lot of scenes that I think I mean, there's a scene where I think it's right after the baby dies, or the child dies, with Rhett Butler in the room crying.
Mm-hmm.
But before you get to him crying, it's raining outside, and mm-hmm. it pans from the rain on the window mm-hmm. to him crying, and that's a cliche. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But the characters have been so firmly established, and the performances are, especially from Clark Gable, are so strong that the scene works, and you're invested. And I think, I mean, this could not be the case always, because certainly there have been classic movies that people are like, oh, it's just been parodied to death, I can't watch it anymore. But I feel that if the material is strong enough, it doesn't even matter if it's been cliched and parodied.
Mm-hmm.
Cliched. If it's been parodied and, mm-hmm. and you know, imitated, it'll still work.
Up.
I mean, it works. Like I said, that 2 hours plus at the end there is pretty much dead on the whole time. It just keeps moving. And you can't really say that. I mean, for 3 hours and 58 minutes?
Yeah.
So pretty much 4 hours. It never lets up. It doesn't drag.
Yeah.
It's like Seven Samurai like that. Because Seven Samurai was the fastest 3.5-hour movie I ever saw in my life.
I actually haven't seen
Seven. You haven't seen Seven Samurai. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Another podcast. Another time.
Another time.
So yeah, it's and when I was looking up just the credits, that this was the director. Now, like, three different people directed this movie. I know. Officially, unofficially. People were fired and what have you. But the guy who's credited for it on the IMDb, his previous movie was Wizard of Oz. That's a crazy 1-2 hit. You could retire after that.
Yeah.
I did Wizard of Oz. Now I'm doing Gone with the Wind. Then y'all can kiss my ass, because how are you ever going to top that? So, yeah, it's an incredible film. I know we spoiled it for people who haven't seen it.
Well, it's been out for 70-plus years.
I think the Blu-ray is 70-plus years, yeah. 70th
well,
anniversary.
When I saw it when I was 8, it was the 50th anniversary, and I don't know if they played it on TV, but I remember there were articles in the newspaper, because we actually, like, I have a scrapbook from when I was in elementary school, and I have newspaper clippings with, like, Rhett Butler and Scarlett, and little bit of Rachel trivia. I have two Scarlett O'Hara dolls.
Wow.
I have the one where she's wearing the green dress, and then I have one with her dress from the barbecue. I also have two commemorative plates. It was me and my mom were really into it. My mom was from the South, so she really enjoyed the movie. And so, yeah, the one plate has a picture of the little girl, Bonnie Blue Butler, on her pony. And then another one is, I think, just a painting of Scarlett and Rhett together. And then, when I was a little girl, like, I wanted to be Scarlett, because I wanted to wear those dresses. And I had, like, frilly dresses. They weren't long like hers, but they were poofy. And, yeah.
I hope you didn't want to. Your cousin relationships were not.
No.
Okay,
no.
Okay, good.
Well,
good.
It's one of those things where you watch movies as a kid and you just don't get what's going on. Like, you know, like how I didn't know that there was an abortion in Dirty Dancing until I saw it when I was in high school.
I did not know that until I saw it in high school.
You know, but I watched it at least a dozen times when I was in elementary
school.
I've
only seen it the once.
So I didn't really get a lot of the whole, like, what was actually going on in the South kind of thing. I just wanted to see the pretty dresses.
There you go.
And, you know, the funny accents. Actually, they really don't have accents.
This movie, you can kind of... I mean, you pointed out about halfway through that Vivien Leigh was British.
Yeah.
And she... I don't want to say she nails a Southern accent, but she does a decent job. Though there is a scene where I think she says darling, and she says it like a British person. Like, yeah. Darling or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say this movie is deserved of its classic status.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need to watch it right away again. But,
no.
But I could see watching it again before I'm dead.
Well, I'm glad.
There you go.
I mean, who's got 4 hours to just, sit down and watch a movie? But it's fantastic. So I'm really glad that you enjoyed it.
I'm glad
I could share that with you.
I'm glad that you know, because we just got married, and it would be kind of awkward if I was like, I hate one of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
Although you don't like so many of the movies that I love, but I don't hold it against you.
Yeah. I don't know what to say.
It's okay. It's okay. So many people don't like the movies I like. I've learned to just deal with it and move on.
Well, I find often, like, you're the one dragging to like me to movies that I don't want to go to. Well, not so much anymore since I'm in school, but before, like...
What was the last movie I dragged you to that you were thinking, no, I don't want to see this, but I'm going because we're in love?
I think it's been a while.
Has it been a while?
Well, I mean, yeah. Since, like, it's before, like, before we moved to, like, when we lived in Michigan.
Can you think of any specific instances?
Oh, there was something where I was like, this is it. I'm not doing this again. I can't remember. I don't.
There was that year where we saw a lot of movies just because we saw Elektra. And so afterwards we would say, well, we saw Elektra. We might as well see this.
Yeah. But no, I feel like a lot of times the stereotype is like, you know, the girl is dragging her boyfriend to these like shitty rom-coms or whatever. But really, with us, it's the other way around. You would try to drag me to these shitty action movies or something. Like, I don't think I think the only movie that I ever made you see that you didn't like was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which, I mean, is a punishment for everybody.
Fucking awful.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
It's a terrible film.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't think so.
All right. Well, I think that's why we can make it work.
I think so too. Yeah.
And also, I think I have a pretty good gauge on you now. So if I take you to see something, I'm pretty confident it'll fall into your wheelhouse. Usually, there's a factor that'll bring you in, you know? I mean, how happy were we that we both, I mean, but you especially, enjoyed Fast Five?
Yeah, I think I kind of wanted to see it. Like, I don't think you made me see it.
But you're not a big Vin Diesel fan.
No, I mean,
I would say you're not a Vin Diesel fan.
No, not at all. No. Find me guilty?
Oof.
Oh.
That's
something you made me watch.
No, you did not watch that. You walked in and out of the room while I was watching
it. I felt like I watched it.
Yeah. That was a movie I didn't even make you watch. It's because he had hair. That's why he was throwing you off.
What was... Oh, no.
That was part of the reason. You were very upset about the hair.
He's not a very good actor.
Vin Diesel.
No.
All right. I'm going to lay it down like that.
I don't like...
He's not as good now. He was
Like XXX, by the way.
Well, listen, Triple X, I know you don't like Triple X, and we rewatched Triple X. Remember, that's how we broke in the Blu-ray player, and you were very upset that was the movie I decided to do, and I was a little surprised. It was not as good as I remember, but Pitch Black is still the bomb. Chronicles of Riddick is still the bomb.
Yeah, these are all movies that I watched early in our relationship to...
That's right, we watched Chronicles of Riddick at your house.
Yep.
Director's cut.
Yeah. Never happening again.
Oh, we got married. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm lucky. Yeah. Man. All right. Well, Rachel, thanks for being on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Yay.
Yeah.
You know, it's really great to catch you here in the house that we share.
Yes.
And maybe I'll have you on again soon. Talk about
money talks.
I don't know if you want it. If you're dying to talk about it, I'll have you on.
Oh, I'm sure I'll have some passionate statements.
Oh,
see, I think I'm more passionate about things I don't like than the things I do like.
It is hard to get. I mean, yeah, exactly. If I saw, like, I tried to write a blog about Gone with the Wind, and I got like a couple paragraphs in, and I didn't really have anything. I mean, what else is there to say about a 70-year-old movie that hasn't been said by anybody else? And unless I'm going to make snarky jokes about, you know, Clark Gable's ears or something, I don't really have anything to say. And but if I had hated it, I could give you 3,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you don't hate Money Talks. It's really funny.
We'll see.
All right. Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks.
Well, that was nice. Wonderful woman, my wife, Rachel. And moving on, did I happen to mention the motorcycle chase and paycheck? Oh, not very good. A big problem with it, and it's funny, because John Woo, of course, knows his way around a motorcycle chase because he did the motorcycle chases in Mission Impossible 2, which are, of course, amazing. And I think the big problem with the motorcycle chases in Paycheck is that they tend to just go in straight lines. And, of course, Ben Affleck is wearing a helmet, so that hides the fact that it's not really Ben Affleck, which lends a level of credibility and realism to the movie, but, you know, that would be nice. But more importantly, it just looks nerdy. Of course, you want to wear a helmet in real life, because if you fall off, you'll die. But in a movie, no helmet. Helmets don't look cool. So in that aspect, you know, it does play up the nerd aspect of Affleck's character, but it downgrades the coolness of the chase. Also, no one really seems very concerned about the fact that they are running from their lives and being shot at, and people are getting killed and blown up. They don't really seem that concerned at all. Everyone seems kind of tired. Like, making paycheck for a paycheck. Ugh. And I'm wondering, since it came out around the same time as Kill Bill, if it was made before Kill Bill, after Kill Bill, and Uma Thurman was just very exhausted from that and just thought, you know what, I'm going to take it easy on paycheck. I'm just going to stroll through it, not really stress myself out too much. In which case, who could blame her? Because I don't really think John Woo's heart was really in it either, you know. So, sorry, it's to paycheck. I'm sorry. It's depressing, and it was the last movie I watched, so that's what I'm going to talk about. Moving on, though, let us get to my conversation with Chris Capshaw and Amanda K. Schill, two actors living in New York, living the dream. We talk about what it is like being a working actor and background artist in the big city. Enjoy.
All right, so I'm here with Amanda K. Schill. Hello.
Hi.
And Chris Capshaw.
Hello.
And you are both actors.
Yes.
And you've actually been in things.
Sort of.
Yeah, a few things.
A few things. Yeah. A couple of your credits. Amanda, you have done background work on Blue Bloods.
Yep.
Gossip Girl. Big fan of that. I'm excited to talk to you about that. Sure. White Collar, and you are core background on Law & Order SVU.
Yes.
What does that mean to be core background?
That means that they'll call you in like once a week to do scenes. Like, I technically am a clerical worker in the precinct. So when they do precinct scenes, they'll call me in like once a week to be part of their background.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
It's a lot of fun, yeah.
So now, is that something that you could maybe work up to one day where you might get to say, like, hey, you had a phone call while you were out?
You know, that happens on a lot of sets, I've heard, but it's very, very rare. So if you're looking to be an actor, you should probably just pursue the agent and not cross your fingers that you're going to get...
Hoping. All right. And Chris, you were background on Boardwalk Empire.
Yes.
And you were in the Pan Am pilot?
I was. They, I believe, reshot the pilot. And it was just one night. I think it was 15 hours on set. And I have no idea, because I actually didn't watch it, but great experience.
Well, that's good. Did you see Christina Ricci? Was she nearby?
Yes.
Oh.
She,
how is she?
She's a very good worker. She.
There we go.
the biggest thing that I noticed about her was she was she definitely has the flight attendant walk. Yeah, she's got a very nice walk. I'll just say that.
There we go. All right. Okay. All right. And you were in the second episode of Unforgettable?
I think it was the second episode.
Second episode.
It was about some author that was being interviewed by the two main characters, and I, again, haven't seen that yet, but I believe I'm behind the... what's her name? Poppy Montgomery?
Poppy Montgomery, yes. Maybe?
I think I...
Star is Born, if we were able to just pull that out of the
air. I know,
air.
I believe that's her name, yeah. But I was mm-hmm. placed sort of behind her. So yeah. Depending on how they cut it, I have mm-hmm. no idea if I'll be shown.
Might be, maybe not. And New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I did that back in, I think, January. I was able to do four nights on that, and it was a great experience. Jon Bon Jovi played a character, and Josh... Dumel also played a character. I was able to actually talk to Josh for probably 30 seconds. Really nice guy. Extremely tall.
Extremely tall. He's one of the few actual tall people in Hollywood.
He's a tall guy. He is.
Okay.
And then I actually got to watch... Gary Marshall was the director of that, and I sort of...
What's Gary Marshall like?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I didn't want to have that inappropriate... hey, I'm the background actor. I'm a big fan of your work. Question.
Really? Word. Are you? Are you a big fan? I don't want to sink you right here.
No, I am. I mean, I'm a big fan just because I got to see him work while being on mm-hmm. set. I was actually able to look over his shoulder at the monitors because when I'm not used, I still like to be on set, sort of studying and watching. But from my experience indirectly with him, he's very casual. And likes to move quickly when he can.
Does he dress up, or is he dressed rather chill?
No, he wears a hat and a sweater. And some maybe khakis as well.
There we go. These are the important things people want to know. So back to Amanda. So let's talk about Gossip Girl.
Okay.
So how many episodes of Gossip Girl have you been on?
Just one. I was on the premiere, and I was actually originally supposed to play, since it already aired, I'll just, you know, talk about it. There's a softball scene, and I was supposed to be a softball player, and when I got there, they pulled about four of us and told us that we looked too young. And that it was supposed to be between writers and artists, like a, you know.
Okay.
Because that's what I think of when I think of writers and artists. I think of the softball games that they must play.
All the time.
Of course, you know, yes. The Juilliard football team comes to mind. So they pulled us, and I ended up doing like a scene on the bleachers and then walking right behind them when they were filming their dialogue. So that was kind of cool. It's neat. I've been lucky enough to be right behind people in like three different shows and be seen by, you know, folks back home.
There, that is always
in Wisconsin,
very cool.
So yeah, yes. It's kind of neat.
So yeah, so being, both of you guys being actors in New York City, mm-hmm. which is, you got to admit, a bit of a cliche. A bit. Do when you go out mm-hmm. with that intent, like, do you have to like sort of psych yourself into this idea, like, I'm gonna do this for real?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, when you're in New York, it's kind of what brings you to New York.
Yeah.
Is the fact that you want to do it for real, like this mm-hmm. is what you want your career to be.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, I think New York is more of a musical, Broadway type of environment, and LA still sort of holds the film aspect of. Everyone's aspirations. If you move to LA, pretty much everyone's into filmmaking. And sure, the stage is pretty prevalent as well. But I've been living in New York for 7 years, and it nothing ever gets old. I can say that.
Well, that's good. Now, how much training do you guys have? Do you guys have any training, or are you just doing it because you love it?
Yeah. When I moved here when I was 18, and I went to. An acting conservatory, and I know that Chris went to ADA.
I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts for 3 years. So in moving to New York, that was what I wanted to do. I didn't want to go into acting, sort of throwing myself into it. I wanted to be a trained actor, and was luckily enough to be accepted into the conservatory, which is absolutely great training.
Well, that's really cool. Now, is there anything that makes you think, okay, New York, I've done it a little bit. How long have you been in New York now?
7 years.
And how long have you been here?
10 years.
Ten years?
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah.
Is anything ever say to you like, okay, I've done New York, now LA? Does that ever come into your mind?
You know, when I first moved out here, I did it because I wanted to get into musical theater, which I've just done a little bit of, and straight plays. And it never really crossed my mind to move to LA unless I got to the point where I was well-known enough that I had someone who would actually fly me out there for auditions.
Right.
I don't know about Chris.
Go for it.
It's been a quick 7 years, but I've made my home here in a way, or I should say in New York. Yeah. I was speaking to my mother maybe about a month ago, and she says, you know, Chris, if you did move to LA, I think I'd be okay with it. Because you've been on your own now for the 7 years almost in New York, and I would definitely be extremely supportive. I wouldn't be worried, and I'm like, oh,
well,
thanks,
that's good.
Mom. And I didn't expect to hear that from her, but I can sort of to piggyback on what Amanda was saying. I don't know that I'll move out to LA as of yet unless something were to bring me out there, either an audition or a job.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
And also, just in the economic sense that a
right.
lot of actors have their side jobs, and since jobs are not that plentiful right
not
now.
Not right now,
yeah,
no.
I mean, maybe 5 years ago it would have made sense to get up and be like, oh, I'll just, go work at Apple or get a
yeah.
waitress job or something in LA, mm-hmm. I'll be fine. But I feel very lucky to have the jobs that I have right now,
right.
and I don't really want to leave that. And just go, yeah, sure, I'll move out there and cross my fingers that I can get a job mm-hmm. at Starbucks.
Yeah. Now, Chris had said that he had a lot of support from home. But Amanda, do you have home support as well?
Yeah, my mom is awesome. My ma. Mm-hmm. She and my family. I have to say I'm very, very lucky that I never had anyone tell me that I shouldn't do it and that I shouldn't move to New York and that it would be a waste of time. I feel like I had a lot of support, especially in high school. I had
That's
a lot
good.
Of teachers behind me, and all of my family, mom's side, dad's side, all like really rooting for me, and a lot of friends too. And so it's been really nice, and it's kind of sad to hear some people say like, oh, my dad told me not to do it, or my mom told me not to do it, and I'd be wasting my time, that they've got people back home who are kind of expecting
always,
for them
yeah.
to fail. That's really sad.
I'm always surprised by that anyone has... Like, yeah, like family members who are like, yeah, give up.
Yeah, don't chase
give
your
up
dreams.
On your dream. Give up on that dream. You
yeah.
know? Could you see how unhappy I am? Yeah,
I mean,
I never understand that.
They're focused on, the plan B. What are you going to do in case the acting doesn't work out?
Right.
And I definitely understand where my family are coming from. Believe me, they've been 100% supportive and making sure that, one, me moving out to New York was a good idea, and to going to the school that I went to was what I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. To all the listeners, the support that our family and friends have given us as artists, it does help. I mean, it helps 100%.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, I know it sounds silly maybe, but like just to hear friends back home that I haven't really seen it in a long time say that they saw me in the background
right.
on something and they're just so excited about it. It feels so good. My friend texted me the other day from back home. She's my hairstylist.
Uh-huh.
I still fly back home to have her do it because she's the only person who ever
oh,
I'm
aware.
Too.
I'm
yeah.
aware of the how hard it is for ladies to find
oh,
the perfect
yeah.
hairstylist.
We've got a bond, and she and I have been friends since we were 3 years old. And
oh,
she
there you
to
go.
Be a, yeah. When
if anybody's
right going to
know your hair,
it's going to be
through all the cycles
chick.
When you first grew it.
Exactly. She
go.
Knows the textures. And she texted me. I'm on her business card, and she let me know that she has clients now who are really excited and are taking her business card, and new clients are taking her business card because I was a background person.
Hey, fame is fame.
So, it's really silly, but at the same time,
yeah.
it feels really good to know that there's people still rooting, and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. So I guess right now, so you're doing the background stuff.
Yes.
I mean, are you guys like audition people, like auditions every day, every week? like hitting that up? I mean, is that something you guys are doing, or is it just as time allows?
Well, I think it's a little bit of what you just said. I mean, I know that I audition whenever I can. To make an extremely long story short, I had the day job, almost had it for, I think, 3 years to pay off the school loans. But I just made a conscious choice to leave that, leave the job. And it was becoming an annoyance to me just because of my unhappiness. So I said, I'll do what I can. But as of now, 4 or 5 months later, I'm auditioning as much as I can for regional commercials and for indie films. But I feel a lot better about actually knowing that I'm pursuing what I want to do and what I love to do.
And I'm researching agents and casting directors right now because I'm kind of new to the film scene, right. And
did,
I really want to get
theater
my headshot
for a
out
while
there.
And
yeah, exactly. So yeah, okay. Now I'm looking into right. What's out there.
Very cool. Very cool. So, as far as, like, actually, I want to talk about this theater thing for a second. So, was this, like, musical theater or dramatic?
The big thing I did, and actually Chris did this a little bit, too, I was with a sex ed theater company, HIV Prevention Sex Education Theater Company, for 3 years. And they do singing, dancing, and education on sex and HIV.
Wow.
And it was amazing.
Good experience. Really good experience.
And so that was the bigger part of the like music, quote unquote, musical theater
right.
that I did. I found out that I don't really have the passion for your typical musical, like right. a lot of people do.
Do you now? Do you do? Are you a dancer? Have you done dancing, taking dance classes, anything like that?
Yeah, like I go in and out of taking hip hop dance classes. I think it's a lot of fun. I don't know if I'd ever get cast in something.
Step
that
Up
would,
4.
I know,
something
right?
like that.
Because as you can tell, I'm a little white girl, so yeah, I don't know.
Aren't those the leads in all the Step Up
Totes,
movies,
yeah, Totes.
So
yeah.
You've got that lined
yeah,
up in
I've
that
got
aspect.
That.
You know? And, you know, Chris, I'm sure you could lift Amanda if you needed to, right?
Absolutely.
That's what the guys do.
Absolutely. Over my head.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, so let's talk about this audition process. I've never been on an audition. How are you guys in auditions? I mean, night before, are you cold sweats? Are you like, whatever, I got this?
One thing that, and I don't know if the Academy teaches now, but one thing that they did not teach me while I was training was how to, I guess, prepare for an audition. The training was essentially for when you, I think, received the job or was offered the job. I'm usually internally a nervous wreck, and I make sure that if it's sides that I have to remember, I make sure that I remember everything or at least 90%, but usually I'm pretty nervous at auditions. I don't know if that is ever shown either on camera or to the casting directors, but it's, you know, auditioning is, people say that it's an art form in itself. You have to get good at it, and I totally agree with that.
I hate them so much.
Okay.
I just freak out inside.
I do
so.
Hate them.
there's just something about going in and having someone half pay attention to you.
Right.
I usually feel it if I think that I'm up for something. I usually feel it when I'm in the room. And lately I usually just audition for things if I'm recommended for them through friends. Someone knows this person. They're like, why don't you go in and audition? Because I think you'd be good for it, and I think that they would like you. So they already know that I'd be a decent person to cast anyway.
Now, is it kind of when you walk in on this thing, is it like 12 other brunette white girls of mid-size same age? Is that what it's like? And
the cattle calls are sort of like that, where, yeah, open calls where it's in backstage, audition newspaper, and so there's like 150 people all in the room, and there have been times where you'll go in and they'll line you up in groups of 10, and they'll just look at you and go, okay, you can stay, you can stay, you can go, you can go, and they won't even listen to you do anything.
That's called the type out. Sometimes they literally do what Amanda just said. They look at you and say, you are what we are looking for, look-wise, and then they'll go to the next person and say, thank you, but no thank you. It sounds harsh, but that it's
okay. Because I've seen that in movies, but I always wondered if that was just them being extra harsh, crazy.
Yeah,
but.
I mean they don't do it in a mean way.
Right.
But,
oh well, that's good. I mean, yeah, in movies they do it in a mean
way.
Yeah,
they're not like lose 10 pounds and come back and you know, or anything.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's really not that harsh. So yeah, there's definitely times where you go in there and you're like, well, God, what's going to make me special over these people? Which is, I think, why I personally just started going in for things I'm recommended for, because right. I don't even want to bother.
I can imagine it can kind of crush your self-esteem a little bit sometimes when you go in. Also, if I mean, we have like our own self-identity. I'm an individual. I'm an interesting person. Then you walk in and there's like 12 people, you know, dressed like you, looking like you, all for the same thing. You're like, am I special? Right. I don't know. Look at all these people look just like me.
Yeah.
But I think once you're in the audition room, what the casting director, how do I put this? I think it took such a long time for me to realize this, but when you go into that room, whether it's a very large one or extremely small, with, you know, either 1 to 5 casting directors and maybe a producer or a director would be there too, they want you to be the one. They want to cast you, because if they do, essentially their job is pretty much over with, sort of. So I've been trying, in any audition that I go into, I try to say to myself, all right, well, you know, they want me to be the person that they're looking for. I don't know if it helps with my nerves, but...
Yeah, like they don't want you to fail.
Right.
They're
right.
Rooting mm-hmm. for you.
Well, yes. That's good.
So, yeah.
All right. Okay. Something a little more fun. Who are your acting inspirations? Who are the people like, I want to be like her or like him? Ooh. Like, they're the ones that I like. Oh, I look
gosh.
For that person for tips.
There are quite a few, you know, actors and actresses that I'm thinking of, but I think in terms of an overall career, and I'm sort of hitting on the business side of things as well. I think I would say Matt Damon. He's a really intelligent individual, and of course he and Ben Affleck started. I don't want to say they started their career with the screenplay that they had written.
Right.
Because I think Matt Damon was acting, and so was Ben Affleck before that. But the way that I'm really trying to look at things as of now is acting-based, yes, but who is also business smart and who sort of plays Hollywood to the best of their ability. And I think, I mean, everyone's kind of a big fan of Matt Damon. And I can sort of see myself taking the roles that he's taken as well, because he has done sort of the thinker movies where it's dialogue heavy, but at the same time he's done, you know, the Bourne Identity series as well. He can be very physical as well. But I, from the, you know, top of my head, I think that's the first name that pops up. But it's, I think it's an amalgamation of a lot of different actors and actresses as well that I'm looking at, and then I'm taking positive things that I see that they're doing correct, leaving the negatives aside and sort of coming up with my own strategy.
Matt Damon is not a bad choice.
No.
Yeah, Amanda, if you want to take that one, you can also take that one.
So Matt Damon.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm still kind of blanking, but I do know that in terms of career, what I would like it to be is not, I don't want one of those tabloid.
No
career.
Lindsay Lohan type
no,
of thing for you?
Exactly.
No, exactly. Not interested in that?
I would just love to be respected and thought of for roles. That's pretty much it. And yeah, like Helen Mirren has cool stuff
there
going
you
on.
Go.
You know, like I don't care
there
if my
go.
First leading role is when I'm up there in age.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be that, like, you know, hot starlet or whatever. I just want...
I like that. I think a lot of... And, you know, she and I are still young actors. But early on when I was sort of learning opinions of everyone, the... Or I should say someone... Maybe this is something I was reading, but... The going saying was, you know, I have until I'm 25 or I have until I'm 30, the big 3-0, to really try to make it in this
right.
industry because my looks are going to fade or whatever. But I've never held that point of view. I've never really agreed to that, just because
no.
Samuel L. Jackson, for example, he kind of got discovered in his, I think, late 20s or 30s, I believe. And I still have that same opinion. I mean, if you love to act, if you love to be in this industry, then you're going to picture yourself doing it forever. Yeah, it's a hard road. And I think the ones that will stay around or stick around for the next 20, 25 years at least are the ones that are only doing it because they love it and they're not doing it for the money or the A-listers or I want to be the next Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie.
And also, you know, not all movies are made with 20-year-old babies, you know, running around.
Exactly.
Multiple ages, multiple roles. Mm-hmm. So sticking around only frees you up to be in more things.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, all of these actors have been doing things forever and ever. It's just that you don't necessarily hear about them until they get to that point in their career.
Yeah. Right. I don't know who said this, but I guess I'm blanking on it. An overnight, this is how I'm paraphrasing here, but an overnight success has already been in the industry for, you know, 20, 25 right. years. There's, mm-hmm. there really is no
overnight success is not a real thing.
Right. Yeah. Or if it is, it is a rare thing.
Rare occurrence. Yeah. Like somebody showed up on Tuesday, they were in a movie by Thursday. It doesn't really happen. Even that guy took a couple days. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, right.
Well, they were showing Inside the Actor's Studio on the TV the other day.
On the TV,
I don't know
yes.
why I phrased it that way, but
where else were they?
Yeah, you never know. Mm. And they had Jennifer Aniston on, and they were talking about her in Leprechaun.
Yeah,
I think. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh my, yeah, there
Leprechaun.
You go. See, yeah,
there you go.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really you think of her from Friends or from Office Space or something. Right. Yeah.
Did she die in Leprechaun?
She's the girl, so she probably
she played
lived.
Like a teenage girl. Yeah, she might have. Who knows?
I
don't remember.
If someone can write into the podcast,
was it the
let
first
us know
or the
if she lives, because we're not going to watch Leprechaun.
I think they even made Leprechauns in the Hood
they did.
Recently that I didn't
Leprechauns
watch.
In space. Leprechauns in space. There's a lot of leprechauns running around in different locales. So we can see. Okay, so they haven't aired yet. They may air, but episode 9 of Boardwalk Empire, we will be able to see you, Chris.
I'm hoping. I mean, I started doing it doing the background for episode 4, 4 through 9. 9 is it's again a rarity that you're sort of chosen, but I'm hoping that I'll have I don't have any lines, but just a bit of FaceTime, as we all call it. Where I'm sort of looking over my right shoulder at Michael Pitt's character, Jimmy, who was actually not there. I think he was in his trailer or something. So I was just looking at this big yellow X camera left as my line of sight. But we never know what's going to make the final cut. So even if I don't make it, my heart's not going to be broken. It was an overall great experience, and I think Amanda could probably agree from her experiences as well that they've been mostly good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of hurry up and wait, but you meet a lot of amazing people who are, you know, some people doing it for a hobby and some people who are, like, really pursuing it.
Yes. Yeah, some people are retired. I've spoken to a lot of, I'm a math teacher, but I love doing the background work. It's fulfilling a dream of mine. And I find that really, I'm impressed just because they're there for 14, 15 hours a day, just as we all are, but they're there because they love the environment.
That's great stuff.
That's awesome.
And we're gonna see you, Amanda. So you're in the background of the Gossip Girl premiere.
Yes.
So people can go mm-hmm. and look that up. Core background on SVU. Mm-hmm. So any SVU episode, you're gonna be mingling around.
There are a couple of times I couldn't go in that they called, but let's see. One that they just showed I was in. I'll be in one called Missing Pieces. Maybe you'll see me meandering around or something.
That is cool.
Yeah.
And Blue Bloods. Now, have you seen Tom Selleck?
Have I seen Tom Selleck? No, he unfortunately wasn't there.
Mustache.
I know, right?
Oh.
I conjured it, though, when I was, you know, thinking of my character for inspiration. But, that was the first episode of the season.
Okay.
If so, it already showed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is good. Well, it's been great talking to both of you about being actors in New York. And I'm hoping that this will be, you know, one day, you know, hey, they did that podcast one time, and look at them now. I believe in it. I think you both are great.
Thank you so much. I'm going to plug my website, and I think I'm going to plug her website
Plug your website.
But if you would like to read about me or look at any films or pictures or videos, my
Where
website.
Where can we find pictures of Chris Capshaw on the internet?
Fully clothed pictures. My website is www.chriscapshaw.com.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my website is amandakshull.com.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, Lauren.
And there you have it. My thanks to Amanda and Chris and, of course, Rachel. My thanks to you for listening. Feel free to write me at lauren.kozlowski@gmail. And follow me on Twitter. I am Cassidy2099. And it's been another fun, wonderful podcast. A whole lot of fun. Like I said, I saw the movie Paycheck. So if I run into you in the next couple of days, I may bring it up. And may tell you to go and listen to this very podcast for further insight on the movie Paycheck. Which, as I mentioned, not John Woo's finest hour. There is a CGI dove near the end of the movie. And my first thought was, CGI dove, John Woo? You couldn't even get real doves. Or, that's the other thing, it's one dove. That's sort of like, I feel that that's like a health indicator. Like, how's John Woo doing? How many doves were in the movie that he did last? And I have a feeling that someone was probably watching Paycheck when it came out on Christmas Day. Genius. And they said, you know, they're watching, like, this is not very good. You know, I mean, was John really into this? Was he feeling this movie? And then that one dove flies out of the screen and it's CGI'd. I said, oh, John gave up. Somebody came to set. They said, hey, John, do you want me to wrangle some doves? Nah, man. We'll do it in post. We'll have somebody animate one. And then they probably said, oh, man, I think John's going to go on vacation after this. So, as I understand, though, he's bounced back. He made some movies back home that I have not seen, but as I understand, are very good. My Netflix queue is very backed up. But I am getting Killer Elite soon, which who knows how that'll be. Maybe I'll let you know what I think of it. So, yeah, so thank you for listening. This is Lauren Has Friends podcast, and I will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.